Attention listeners, we're excited to announce that AfterSight will be moving to our new office on March 26th. As we make this transition, our services will be down most of the day. We apologize for any inconvenience, but truly appreciate your understanding as we start this new chapter. Thank you for listening to AfterSight.
You're listening to an AINC original podcast. We believe you don't have to do life without a compass. Let us be your guide on this amazing journey. Welcome to Navigating Life with Vision Loss.
Hello, I'm Kim Wardlow. I'm your host for NLVL. I'm also the executive director here at AfterSight. So I just want to welcome you to this episode. We are in our month talking about emergency preparedness and how you can be prepared and maybe some things you haven't thought about in that process of trying to be prepared if an emergency should happen. So today I have Monica Weber. She's a coordinator at the Boulder Office of Disaster Management, and she's going to be doing three episodes with us. So lots of different aspects of emergency preparedness. So welcome, Monica. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about this very important topic and break it down into hopefully some more bite-sized pieces to get people tangible things that you can do at home to get more prepared.
That will be great. I think sometimes we all know we need to be prepared, but sometimes it just seems a little overwhelming and it's easy to put off. And then all of a sudden, maybe you're in a position where that would have been really helpful and you need to evacuate or you need to be prepared for something. So that will be very helpful for our listeners. Do you want to share a little bit about your background and how you got involved in emergency management? I know that's not what you've done your whole career. So
yeah, that is correct. I guess I took a non-traditional route into emergency management, which being in this field now just over 2 years, I found that that's not as uncommon as I thought. I thought everyone had, you know, kind of, they've gone to school for it or they've been a first responder. And that's not necessarily the case. But my background, my first job out of college was in radio. So I worked in radio for 4 years and then transitioned into working in higher education in residence life specifically. And that kind of helped me hone in some skills that I think have been really transferable to my role now. And that working in residence life, you're dealing with crisis intervention, things like that. Yes. For students in the halls where they live on a college campus, which can be sometimes a disaster in and of itself.
So that right.
Disaster management worked out pretty well to use some of those same kind of critical thinking skills and working on the fly to do the work that we do during disasters, which is the support and coordination and kind of finding the gaps that are going on for consequence management in our community and figuring out how to support there. And then when we're not in disaster times, my role is primarily our community education around personal preparedness. So it really pulls off some of those education things mm-hmm. that I used to work with and transitions it into a really nice way to get to work with the community in a larger way, which I love.
So now in your current role, different types of disasters that you're working with and crises that you're working with, what are the most common that you all see in your office?
Yeah, I would say that for us and along the Front Range, wildfires by and far our number one hazard that we experience. And so that sometimes a lot of our preparedness information is tailored or a little more focused towards the evacuation side or what you do in regards to fire, even with just smoke impacts and other things that can occur around mm-hmm. that, even if you're not in direct harm's way from the fire. So that's one. And then communicable disease is currently, based on our assessment, the number two. And so that can be human to human, like we all lived through a pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. But then things like communicable disease from the zoonotic side, so animal to animal, and that we see really impact like our ag industries or those sorts of things. Then right. flood running out our number three. And then high winds and then extreme temperatures mm-hmm. skewing on the cold side are what we see as kind of our top five. And so when we talk about disaster preparedness, some things do lend themselves well to specific types of hazards, right? Like wildfire mm-hmm. has a specific set of things you might do that you wouldn't do for a flood. But we really try to approach it from what are the disruptions that you might experience and then planning for those. so that everyone doesn't feel like they have to have a wildfire plan, and then they have their flood plan and mm-hmm. their wind plan and all these different things that become right. hard to manage, but instead think about, all right, what are those resources that you use day in, day out, and how, if that was to be disrupted or that resource was lost for any reason, that you would continue to kind of move through that by working with your support system and working on that front end to prepare so that you've got, you know, plan A, but then plan B, C, and as far down that hole as you want to go.
Right. Yeah. You definitely want to have a backup plan because mm-hmm. your first plan doesn't always work out. I think most of us, you know, but just to reemphasize the importance of being prepared, especially in vulnerable communities. So individuals that have disabilities or who might be older or, you know, just mm-hmm. that might need to think about some extra steps.
Yeah. I think it's super important. The more prepared you can be, the more time you're buying yourself to be able to make those decisions that you can feel confident in. So I think that for me, with everyone in our community, is a really important first step. And especially if there might be mobility challenges, other things that you might be depending on or relying on in different ways, really helpful to be able to plan ahead and also know that you might be support system for someone else as well. Right. So not mm-hmm. just putting anyone into a box of this is how we all must be. You have these identifiers, so you must, you know, need assistance, or that you might be the one assisting your support system. And so really right. making sure that folks take kind of that communal approach to it, because in a disaster, the normal supports that might be in place, like transportation or anything like that, might not be running as normal, right? Because services and things are getting diverted either because they're being impacted by that hazard or because all the transportation resources that normally exist are getting funneled to get people out of that immediate danger evacuation area. So the more that we can plan individually ahead of time, it helps responders and our other resources get to the people that need it most critically first in that impact area. And then if we can have some semblance of a personal plan, that helps us to just alleviate that and make sure those resources can get to those who need them most critically first. And with our disability population, making sure that those support resources and support systems are all in place as well to get people the assistance that they might need during times of disaster and afterwards as well, which we'll talk about in another episode. but that kind of recovery piece and what you do after the disaster has happened.
Right, right. Well, and first off, you have to be able to get the alerts.
Yes.
And I know sometimes that's a question. Are people aren't sure how to get alerts, or they have questions about, well, I live in one county, but I work in another county, or one city versus another city. Do I sign up for alerts in both? Like all of those types of questions. What are the alert systems that people should be aware of?
Yeah, so the alerting system can be very complex, and that's a really good question, and I appreciate you asking it because I teach workshops as part of my job that we do about quarterly or by request, and I always tell people, I'm like, we're not going to go off the rails with questions during the alert part because we could be here for an hour and a half just alone digging into all the intricacies of that. But no matter where you live, there is going to be some type of opt-in alert system is typically something that exists. And so for areas along the Front Range, et cetera, we have these opt-in systems. And those are really critical to sign up for because they're what are going to get you the information the soonest and make sure that it gives you that, again, buying that time to make different decisions. So what we have in Boulder County, we have BOCO Alert, which folks can sign up for at bocoalert.org. And that's kind of our primary. That's what'll get folks that information via phone call, text message, email, or TTY TDD system, or all of that. If you want all, when you create your account, you can select what you want. You can enter in multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, all of that to make sure that you can access it in whatever way fits your need best. That's our primary. And with that, folks can add up to 5 addresses. And that's a really, really critical part that I want to stress, just because oftentimes folks sign up, they put their home address in because you have to put some kind of address to be able to sign up, and then they leave it at that. But then not thinking about, do they have school-age children? Are they themselves in school? Do they work somewhere? Do they have community center, organization, somewhere that they go often, that address isn't in there. They don't list the address in their account. They're not going to receive alerts near that address, if that makes sense. So that one's all dependent on what you list in your account is what you're going to get alerts for. And so for me, for example, I have like my home, my workplace, and the place that I volunteer on the weekends in there, all of which are in Boulder County. That's another really critical part. If you live in Broomfield and you sign up for BoCo Alert and put your Broomfield address in, it's not going to know what to do with it because it's not in Boulder County. So that's our first one. And then for folks, if you feel like five addresses is just not enough, because there's some folks where you're really mobile around the county. Like I know I've got lots of friends in different places around the county as well. ReachWell is another tool that we have that takes all the same information from BoCo Alert and just pushes it through this app called ReachWell. And ReachWell was acquired by our communication center. So our 911 centers are the folks that actually send out the alert. So they got this kind of software app system to be able to get that alert information out in multiple languages. So again, it takes all that BoCo Alert information. And then for people that download ReachWell, which is free, so it's the words reach. So R-E-A-C-H, well, W-E-L-L, all is one word. If you search that on a smartphone and download it and then search for BoCo Alert within that, you'll add the little widget and that'll start getting you those alerts. And then folks can select whatever language they would like. It has over 120 languages that people can choose from. And so it'll just get those BoCo alerts translated and then they pump through the app. So those are kind of our two main ways. And then another thing that I always like to just add in there because it's very weather related is that through BoCo Alert and ReachWell, because that's all the same messages, right? We don't send out things that are like National Weather Service types of alerts, right? So if there's just a tornado warning or there's a flash flood warning, those things aren't necessarily going out over BoCo Alert unless responders have assessed, oh, yep, we're seeing this creek start to rise up. We need to send people an additional warning. But if folks live in areas that you think might be high risk, let's say for flooding or other types of really weather-based hazards, getting a weather radio is a really great tool because it's like having a personal siren inside your house, basically, so that'll go off anytime. National Weather Service are the ones that send those alerts out, and those radios allow them to go through that system. So that's another really great tool that I just encourage folks to have, especially folks that they live more rurally, because sometimes cell service or phone service in general can be spotty. That'll give them kind of that tip off. If we have severe thunderstorms and you've got to, you know, make sure you get inside to stay safe because there's going to be 2-inch hail with it, or, you know, we've got flash flood risk or those kind of things. So those are the main alerting types.
Yes. I think I get alerts, weather system, National Weather Service alerts like through my phone. And that may just be through an app on my phone. As well. And that can be really helpful. Do all parts of the state, I know, you know, you're in Boulder County, so obviously that's what you're dealing with, but do all parts of the state have some type of alert system?
Yeah. Everywhere will have some type. And most places will have something that you can opt into. There's alert systems that exist on the national scale that folks don't have to opt into that are cell tower based. And oftentimes folks think they're signed up because they'll get those, which kind of come through in that Amber Alert style. So it'll make that really loud blaring noise on your phone. And then there'll be some kind of message that folks can then get that pops up just kind of on that home screen if you have a smartphone. But what that doesn't account for is that won't give you an advisory or a warning face. So some of those kind of earlier alerts, those are only used when it's kind of dire and you've got to take action now, right? Whether that's climb to higher ground during a flood, evacuate, shelter in place. So we really encourage folks opt into whatever system. And if you do a search on the internet or contact your local public safety official, so that's fire or law enforcement, they can guide you to how to get signed up for that. If internet access isn't something that's accessible for you, but checking that out and make sure that you get opted in, because again, that just buys you that time. And it's a way to get credible information from the source so that you can make a good decision and an informed decision about what next steps you're going to take, right? Because one of the things we like to tell people is always trust your gut as well. If you are, you know, out where you live in the community and you, you know, hear, smell, see, sense that something is not right, right? There seems to be some danger, whether that's I smell smoke, I guess I'm very smell focused with a lot of things, but I think about, you know, that's something where I'm very sensitive to. And so I'm like, oh, this smells kind of chemically. I don't know that I love that. I'm probably going to try to get away from that. And so we really encourage folks, first and foremost, always remember, trust that gut feeling, because oftentimes when we have alerts that do go out, it's because someone in our community called 911 first and said, I just experienced this thing, or, you know, I heard from a neighbor this thing is going on and I'm calling to let someone know it's happening, right? So you might be that first person that is kind of triggering the alerts to go off eventually, right? And the way that that happens too, I'll just explain that because this is all complex stuff. But let's say I'm a community member. I call 911 because I smell smoke. Oh my goodness, there's a large plume somewhere. I call that in 911, let them know. I think there's a fire near me. Our dispatchers at the 911 centers then send out fire law enforcement to go assess what's going on. And then they, as first responders that have expertise in, you know, these different areas, depending on what the hazard is, make an assessment of what severity level of alert that we need to send out. So in Boulder County, it's advisory, warning, or order, order being the most severe, right? And that looks different in different areas. Some places use like pre-evac and evacuation. So it very much depends, because we don't have any statewide or national language that's used around that, which again adds to that complexity level. But getting familiar with what those are in your area, but then the responders determine what that area is and then get those alerts sent out. So again, knowing that you might be that first initiator that causes them to go out and look at it. So if that is the case, just make sure to remember to take action to keep yourself safe. You don't have to wait for an alert. And if you ever feel unsafe for any reason, it is okay and encouraged to take action. And that's something that might feel silly to say, of people saying like, well, why is she telling me not to wait for an alert? Of course I'm not going to wait if I think I'm in danger. But what we've learned and what I've learned through working with the public and working with folks that have been through some of our fires or other hazards is there is kind of this hesitation of, well, I don't want to make the wrong choice, and so I'm going to wait until I get guidance. But sometimes that's putting people in really risky situations. And so with that, something that I encourage folks to do as well is, like, if you feel like your gut feeling isn't always maybe the most correct, have that phone a friend, right? Where you can say, like, I think that maybe I should leave, have it be a neighbor, a friend, someone close by or not, that you can kind of process that with and use to help you decision make, if that's helpful.
That's good advice. Are these systems, the alert systems and just making preparedness accessible, are these systems accessible for people? I mean, certainly if it's something audible, a person who is blind or has low vision most likely can hear it, unless they're deafblind, then that might be a challenge. Yeah. How do things work for people that may have different disabilities?
Yeah, that's a great question. So with Boco Alert, that one will come through as like an audio message, and it's a human being that records it. So it's got that going for it, that's not kind of that robot automated voice, which can be more comforting than just kind of like AI sounding, you know,
right,
disembodied voice coming through. But it's one of our dispatchers that will record that message, and that'll come through. So that's one way to get that auditory side. And same thing, if folks have screen reader capabilities with, let's say, email, they can choose to have that email. And then if that screen reads, that works well for them. And that, I think, is all based on personal device setup. But those are two ways. And then for deafblind, that's one where, you know, I would be curious to kind of assess our systems more, because I don't know that we have a really great option for that currently. And so that's something where I would encourage folks to, if you are listening to this and have thoughts or ideas or ways that things are not reaching you, get in touch with us at Office of Disaster Management or the folks wherever you might live and are listening, because that's really helpful for us to know, is getting those spots that we're not attending to and making sure that we are getting voices from our community, and then assessing those needs and making sure that we're doing things to fill those gaps, because we have a responsibility and work towards making sure we're meeting the needs of our whole community, but knowing that sometimes we just are missing the boat on that. And so making sure that we get that feedback is really helpful for us.
Yeah, we definitely encourage folks to do that, whether obviously they can contact you directly, but even if they contacted us, we could pass that along. I know I have learned in just working with a group of deafblind individuals, they're their own group. I'm just doing some background things in terms of the virtual Zoom meetings. But it is interesting, because it's not just one thing or one option. There's folks that have slightly more hearing than vision, and so they're using assistive technology to be able to hear, and then in the meeting. But then others have slightly more vision than hearing, and they're using the sign language interpreters to communicate during the meeting. And so, yeah, I could see in something like emergency alerts that could get very, very complicated trying to set up systems.
Absolutely. And there are some really neat things that I've seen in other states. I think maybe San Antonio, Texas has a program where they've got like signing that I know is for deaf community, but that goes through alerts. For us, because of the swiftness of the types of disasters we experience, it's always that battle against how do we get information out the most quickly that it will be effective.
Right.
Because for areas that have things like hurricanes or some of those more predictable or slower moving things, gives a little more time to prep. You know, they've got a couple days where for us, it might be, we have 10 minutes to get this alert out to make sure that people's life safety is being prioritized. And so, yes, any thoughts, we always welcome.
That'd be great. We'll definitely provide feedback, whether it's to us or directly to the Office of Disaster Management or whatever city or county office is applicable for you.
Yeah. I'm glad sure they would link up to that too, as well. If someone, I'm happy to share my email personally as well, so folks can get in touch. But then if they're trying to get in touch with folks in their county or home jurisdiction, because even some municipalities have their own emergency managers, even within our county, I'm happy to help get folks linked up to that so that they can get the answers or just give that feedback and input that's really so critical.
Super. So can we start touching on now, like, so you know, you've gotten signed up for the alerts, but now you're trying to think about, okay, what else do I need to do to prepare? You know, do I need a go bag, or, you know, what are some of those simple steps that people can start to take that will help them to be prepared, but also to make that process of preparing not seem so overwhelming?
Yeah, I think that, you know, with it, trying to find those actionable steps, the main three that I always tell people in like large buckets, when we talk about preparedness, is always that sign up for alerts. So we've hit that, check the box here. Number two is looking at assessing risk. And so with that, we encourage people, like, think about what are your current resources, skills, and abilities, and think about where you feel really confident in those. And then maybe the areas that you feel a little more shaky, right? And so I give the example for myself, and we use kind of to frame this, like, FEMA has lifelines that they use for emergency management on the, like, professional side that has like hazmat or hazardous materials and other things. Mm-hmm. Don't touch that if you're just your average community member, but they have some that are applicable for community members. So things like food, water, shelter, communications, transportation, power and gas, those kind of things that we might utilize day to day. Health and medical is another one. And so getting people to think about those larger buckets and how you might assess, okay, I feel really good about the resources that I have for health and medical, but transportation, I don't feel so hot about, right? Mm-hmm. So for myself, I know, like, I moved, I can't say recently anymore because it's been almost a year, but I don't know all my neighbors that well. And my old community, I knew neighbors pretty darn well. And so for me, knowing that if I went out to my vehicle, because I have a personal vehicle, if it didn't start one day or I couldn't access it, it's got a tree that's fallen down over it and I can't get out of my spot, what am I doing? Right. And so for me, it's figuring out, okay, that's an area I feel pretty not confident about. My backup option right now would be walking, which is not, you know, the best of options. And so it's leaning into, okay, if I know that's where I feel most vulnerable, I need to start to then make those inroads with my support system, folks that live nearby, neighbors, friends, and start to plan for who can be my backup ride, right? And plan those ahead of time and really making sure that folks that then become part of our plans are aware that they are, because that's another really critical step. We always teach people, like, your plan needs to be actionable, meaning that you can actually do it. So it can't be a plan that you've created in a vacuum and then your, you know, friend that lives 10 minutes away doesn't know they're supposed to be your ride. And now you call them in a panic saying, hey, are you coming to get me? So we, you know, encourage people to think about that and just really lean into that support system and start to create those kind of plans together. Because, again, someone might be a resource for you, but you might also be a resource for them as well, right? So really taking that community approach. And then the kind of third bucket after you assess your risk and pinpoint those areas is start to make a plan, right? And so we encourage folks, which we'll talk about in another episode, but that really being around, like, if you had to evacuate and the things to do related to that, or if you were at home, right? Because we are snowed in. We have a power outage, which doesn't mean you're stuck at home, but most people aren't, you know, bopping around during the power outage to go drive through all the signals that are down and flashing. So thinking about those kind of things and what you would need with you if you were kind of in place as well, right? Whether that's due to weather or just other factors that might cause us to be indoors for longer periods of time. And then making sure that it's sustainable. And by that, we just mean that whatever your plan is, it can sustain for as long as you need it to, right? So I think about things like medication or power to things. Do you need to keep medication at a certain temperature? Do you have enough medication on hand that will last you if you were, you know, stuck at home for 3 or 4 days? Do you need backup power for durable medical equipment, for your cell phone, for those sorts of things? Which we'll go into that more next time. But really thinking then and picking those areas that you feel maybe the most vulnerable, and then picking out changes that you can make, right? So for me, it's getting in touch with my neighbors to figure out who can be my ride. But then other steps that might be, you know, simpler as well, because I really try to figure out how do we break this down into bite-sizable chunks so that if you're someone that's like, well, I need a generator to power, you know, durable medical equipment I have, well, that might not be super accessible because unless you've got just money laying around, that might not be something you go spend a couple thousand dollars on today, right? So instead, maybe your actionable step is I'm going to start to talk with neighbors and friends about if my power is out, could I come stay with you because you're a little bit out of the area and you will have power, right? Or is it things like a little tiny change that I made was realizing a couple of years ago we had extreme cold weather and we were working sheltering for that. And you know, we were driving to and from work, but it was, you know, negative 14 out and no one's really out on the roads because it's cold and icy and all this. And we were leaving here at 11 o'clock at night. And I realized, oh my goodness, if I get stuck on the side of the road because I slide out or anything and I just have my phone and I have no charger in my car, I will just be stuck there waiting for someone to come along at 11:30 at night and find me, which is probably not super likely, right? And so for me, a little change I made was just I keep a cell phone charger because my car that I have now has the ability to charge from it for a phone. I just keep that little, you know, $10 cord in the car. So it can be even little steps like that, right? Or keeping extra water, some extra food on hand so that if we were to have any kind of outages from infrastructure like power, water, et cetera, you've got some of those resources on hand. So all that to say, we'll go into it more next week, but you can try to break those things down into what's realistic because there are a lot of things that either financially or just other accessibility means wise aren't realistic for folks. And so trying to think about what is within the wheelhouse of things that you can do today or in the coming weeks or months that can help you towards that, because you don't have to solve it all today. That's my other advice for folks is like, you know, once you listen to these few episodes that we do, you don't have to feel like, oh my goodness, if I don't do this in the next month, I'm a lost cause. Not at all. Because any step that you take, you're going to be better after you take that step than you were beforehand. And that's the shift that we're looking for folks to make is the more we all can prepare as individuals to the best of our ability, the more empowered that we can feel, and the more prepared we become as a community as a whole. So by you doing that, you're doing a wonderful thing for yourself and for our larger community as well.
Great. Well, thank you. And as you said, we're going to be talking more about setting up a plan and an evacuation plan if you needed to evacuate. And I'm sure we'll talk about things like if you have a service dog or pets and, you know, all of those things that add on, or a child you're responsible for, you know, all those things.
Absolutely.
As we get into a little bit deeper into the planning phase. So we'll do that next week. But thank you for the information today and sharing the information about the alert systems and the possibility there of putting multiple addresses and knowing that if the addresses you have are in different counties, that you need to look at each county to sign up and all of those types of things. But I think that's great information for folks because that's the first thing you need to, you want to have your plan. But you also need, if that emergency comes, you need to know it's there and that you need to put that plan into action. So thank you so much. And I look forward to our next chat for the next episode.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And thanks for having me.
Well, thanks everyone for listening as well. As always, if you have any questions, feel free to contact us here. You can reach us at contact@aftersight.org or by phone. And we always look forward to hearing your comments or suggestions or any input that you may have. You may have your own experience in an emergency and found something that was really helpful to you that we could share out to other folks. So please reach out to us if you have anything like that. And we hope that this information and the information we'll be sharing with you in the next couple of episodes help you navigate your life with vision loss.